Okay. You can follow? Okay, good. Jai Anilo Premadana Koruna Pracho Na Pracho Heinu Prabhu Kota Gela Charya Taku Kota Gela Charya Taku Ahamura Sarupa Kahatsana Kahan Ahamura Sarupa Kahatsana Kahana saragu nakaha pachita bhava gunatara pachita bhava kahamu Mata juga kaha kavira kaha mora bata juga eka kale Kota Gela Guru Natara Eka Kale Kota Gela Guru Natara Ashane Kutivo Mata Annale Pashiva Pashane Kutiva Mata Annale Pashiva Goranga Gunera Nere Kota Gela Papa Goranga Gunera Nere Kota Gela Papa Sesava Sangya Sange Je koilo vilas Se sabat sangira sange Je koilo vilas Se sangana paya kande naru chamo Se sangana paya kande narukamoda Ihanero premadanna kuna raju Janela prema dana, koruna. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravritakacharya Olsa Teta Satishi Shiman. His Divine Grace Abhaya Chatanad Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijaya Iskan Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijaya Ananda Goti Vaishna Vrindi Kijaya Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijaya Ram Se Gahoshi Krishna Chaitana Rabu Nichananda Shidwaita Garadha Shiva Siddhi Gaur Vakta Vrindi Kijaya Shri Shri Radhakrishna Govakavata Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturidam Kijai Jagannatha Sami Kijai Yamanamai Kijai Shimani Galasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindi Kijai Gaur Vrimananda Adiyadi Gaur. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Gurun Gauranga, Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, I will just read the translation of this poem written by Narottama Das Thakur, who brought the treasure of divine love and who was filled with compassion and mercy. Where is such a personality as Srinivasa Acharya gone? Where am I, Swarup, Damodar, and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where am I, Raghunath Bhattan, Gopal Bhattan? Where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottama Das simply weeps. So as I mentioned, today is the commemoration of the disappearance day of Srivas Thakur. So, Om Ganatimirandashtaya. Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai Slipping Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we'll speak a little bit about Srivas Thakur. We'll probably take up the whole class time. And for me it's a very important day too, because it's the day I took sannyas in 1978, so 41 years of ecstasy. So, anyway, so we're all aware that Srivas Thakur is one of the members of the Panchatattva. So the word tattva is something that's very interesting. The word tat basically means that. So it's a category, tattva. So not only that, you know, you can point out this, that, whatever it is, but it's a category of something that continues to exist as described by Krishna in the Gita, nasato vijate bhavo, na bhavo vijate sataha, ubhayo drishto antas tvayas tattva darshabhihi. That is something that continues to exist. Whereas other things in this world, like this chair and whatever, you know, the floor, whatever, and these bodies, of course, they don't continue to exist. They actually come into being and then they cease to exist. Anyway, so tattva, the pancha tattva refers to the five categories of things that are eternal. And one, of course, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that, of course, is Vishnu tattva, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, and Advaita Acharya. They're Vishnu tattva. Advaita Acharya is quite interesting because he is considered to be both the expansion or avatar of Mahavishnu and Sadashiva. So sometimes people ask the question, someone actually this morning in an email asked me this question about Sadashiva. And Sadashiva is an expansion of Krishna, or an expansion of an expansion, or a portion of a planetary portion of Krishna that exists in the spiritual world, and from whom the Shiva in this material world comes into existence. And Lord Shiva in this material world has many different, let's say, expansions or appearances. Like there's the Rudra expansion, which is described in the Bhagavatam, the 11 Rudras. And then there's the expansion of Lord Shiva that comes from the glance of the Mahavishnu. Saikshita, which implants all the living entities within the material world. Anyway, today is the appearance of Shivastha, of course. I'm not going to get into a Dvaita Tattva. But then you have Gadadhar, who is Shakti Tattva, considered to be Radharani. And then you have Srivastakur, who is Jiva Tattva. Jiva Tattva, that's the same Tattva that we're members of, in case you hadn't discovered that. In case you had thought you were Vishnu Tattva, that you were God or something like that, and you had somehow or other read that book, The Secret, or the movie The Secret, thinking that the universe is meant to serve you. It's not meant to serve you, it's meant to serve Krishna. It's meant to punish you until you can serve Krishna. So that's Jiva Tattva's position. So as far as Srivastakur is also considered to be an avatar of Narada Muni. And of course, Narada Muni appears in many of Krishna's pastimes. And in this particular pastime of Srivastakur, Narada Muni actually got married, which is interesting. He's supposed to be a Kanda Brahmachari, Naishtika Brahmachari, but in this particular pastime he got married and he had a kid, which we'll talk about this. So, Srivastakur lived in a place called Srihatta, later moved to Navadvip, just like we have a Srivas Angam, which is very close to where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, and right next to a Dvaita Bhavan, where a Dvaita Charya lived, and right near the Yogapith. So, and he lived in Srihatta, and then he moved to Navadvip, and then as soon as Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he went back to Srihatta. And he had his brothers. His brother was, of course, Sriram and Sripati. And Sriram is described as Parvatamuni, who is the eternal associate of Narada Muni. You hear many stories about Narada Muni and Parvata Muni traveling around. Srivastakur's wife's name was Malini, who is considered to be Ambika, or Krishna's nurse, when Krishna was present on this planet. And his niece was Narayani, who was the mother of Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is considered to be the Ambika's sister. So Srivastakur was the friend of Jagannath Mishra. In other words, he was much older than Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, basically the same age as Jagannath Mishra, the father of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Malini was the friend of Sachi and actually cared for Sachi like a nurse when Sachi was pregnant. So during Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's early pastimes, before he took initiation from Ishwarapuri, he acted pretty much like a scholar who, in many cases, was harassing the Vaishnavas. In other words, he would defeat the Vaishnavas. Not so much preach atheistic philosophy, but he would just get into nyaya. Nyaya means like logic and reasoning. And based on that, he would have arguments with them. And particularly, he would have arguments with Srivas. And Srivas would get quite upset with him. And one time Srivastakur said to him that, "O crest jewel of arrogance, do you know the purpose of life?" Because Lord Chaitanya acted very arrogantly. And why did he do that? Well, he was showing us the importance of accepting the spiritual master. Because before Lord Chaitanya accepted the spiritual master, he acted like that. And after Lord Chaitanya accepted his spiritual master, Ishwarapuri, then he actually manifested his full devotion to the Supreme Personality of God in the mood of Srimati Radharani. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to Srivastakur that, "By your mercy, I'll become a devotee." And one of the first things that Lord Chaitanya did after taking initiation from Ishwarapuri was to manifest not only that he was a devotee, but to manifest that he was the Supreme Personality of God. He showed Srivastakur forearms, that he had forearms, and he actually went into Srivastakur's house and sat on Srivastakur's altar. Can you imagine that? You know, somebody comes into your house or comes into the temple and sits on the altar under Kandarvika Giridhari, you'd be quite shocking. And then all of a sudden he exhibits four arms. And that's what Srivas saw. And then when Srivas saw that, he offered these wonderful prayers, which I'm going to read right now, at Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. My obeisances at the lotus feet of the support of the entire universe, Vishwambar, whose bodily color is like that of a newly arrived rain cloud and whose garments are the color of a thunderbolt. My obeisances at the lotus feet of the son of Sachi, who is bedecked with ornaments of peacock feathers and a garland of red beads, that's Gunja. My obeisances at the lotus feet of the pupil of Gangadas, the beauty of whose lotus face conquers that of 10 million moons. My obeisances at your lotus feet, you who carry a buffalo horn and stick and a flute. The four Vedas have proclaimed you to be the son of Nanda. Unto you, my dear Lord, my obeisances I offer again and again. That's from the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Majjhalila, second chapter, verse 272. Today my birth, my activities, my everything have become successful. Today my very existence has been crowned with the greatest auspiciousness. Today the race of my forefathers has finally borne fruit, and my house, which is also their house, has become blessed. Today the great fortune of my eyes is completely beyond calculation, because I have been able to see that person whose lotus feet are served by the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi. So that's a wonderful prayer offered by Srivas Thakur, and now we'll tell some stories of different things that occurred in the Srivas Angam. One point is that anybody who served Srivas Thakur became very, very dear to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's two stories about that. One is that Srivas Thakur had a servant named Duki, which means unhappy, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reinitiated her as Suki and made her happy and made her a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Another story is even more radical, that Srivas Thakur had a tailor who was a meat eater. And because he served Srivas Thakur, then he got the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and became a pure devotee. That's amazing. You know, generally we think if someone is eating meat or breaking the regulative principles or whatever, he or she is not going to be able to take up devotional service. But by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, I'm not saying that this excuses any of us. Please don't take this out of context and criticize me. But in this particular case, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, a dog can swim an ocean, a blind man can see. So this is the real point. Not that we neglect the regulative principles, but we obtain the mercy of Lord Chaitanya through his pure devotees, especially through his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. And that's the secret of success. And how do you obtain the mercy of someone like Srila Prabhupada? Well, first of all, follow the basic principles, instructions of Srila Prabhupada, and secondly, dedicate yourself to his mission. I mean, that's one thing that I think has been a little neglected in the preaching or in the teachings so far in Krishna consciousness in the modern day ISKCON movement. We, instead of just concentrating on the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, we should be talking about Prabhupada's mission and encourage people to become attached to Srila Prabhupada's mission. Because Prabhupada was very much mission focused, not so much focused on just going back to Godhead. Just like one of my disciples just left his body the other day, and his daughter was saying, has he gone back to Godhead? Has he gone back to Godhead? Has he gone back to Godhead? I said, that's not so important. He's engaged, because he was chanting, had devotees around him. I said, he's engaged in serving Prabhupada's mission. And that's non-different than going back to Godhead. So, anyway, Lord Chaitanya's mercy. So another famous story that Srila Prabhupada told, and is also told in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is about Srivas Thakur's son. He had one son. And What happened is that there was a kirtan going on in the Shiva Sangam, because generally they would have these amazing kirtans going on sometimes for 72 hours at a time without stop. And during this kirtan, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing in ecstasy, and Srivas Thakur's only son passed away. And Srivas Thakur noticed that his wife, Malini, was crying. And he said, "What are you crying about?" And she explained that she was crying because her son had passed away, which is a natural response from a mother, isn't it? As far as I know, the child passes away. And Srivas Thakur got angry with her. He said, "Unless you stop crying, I'm going to give you something really to cry about." Because he was known to have a little bit of a temper. Not that he abused anybody, but he had a temper. And so she somehow or other wiped her eyes, didn't cry, because he didn't want to disturb Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan. And then Lord Chaitanya continued his kirtan. At the end of the kirtan, what happened is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Something has happened in this house that perhaps is not so auspicious, so tell me." And Srivas Thakur said, "It's just a little thing, you know, just some soul passed away." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Why didn't you tell me?" And Srivas Thakur said, "I didn't want to stop the flow of the nectar of your kirtan." And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Where is that boy who passed away?" And Srivas Thakur said, "He's in this other room." They went to the other room. Lord Chaitanya put his hand on the boy's chest. And Srivas Thakur and Lord Chaitanya said, "Why did you leave?" The boy sat up and said, "Many, many lives have I had, you know, many, many fathers, many, many mothers. But in this life, I had your association. So I've gone back to Godhead." So then the boy was allowed to lay back down and went back to Godhead. In other words, he didn't want to stay in the material world. It's interesting. It relates, is similar to the story of King Nimi in the Bhagavatam, where King Nimi was cursed by his guru to die because he had gone on Sankirtan. Distributed some of Prabhupada's books. No, not really, but I'm just... He had gone on Sankirtan without his guru's permission, while his guru was in the heavenly planets collecting doctrine from the demigods. And anyway, so he died, and the sages who were doing this sacrifice, this Krishna conscious sacrifice, at the end, asked the demigods to bring him back to life. He came back to life and he said, I don't want to be back to life. I was in the spiritual world, so let me die. So he died, went back to Godhead. And then they churned his body. And by churning the body, they got Janaka the First. And Janaka the First was the first of a whole line of kings, of whom the Janaka, the father of Sita Devi, later on appeared. You know, Janaka the First, Janaka the Second, Janaka the Third, Fourth, etc. Like Henry First, Second, and not the Eighth, of course. Like the different, or King Edward, or whatever you have, like that. So, anyway, so this boy decided to go back to Godhead in Srivas Thakur's pastimes. And Srivas Thakur was a very interesting grahastha because he never worked. He just depended on Krishna's mercy. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked him, "How do you maintain your large family?" And he only had one son, but he had a lot of dependents. And Srivas Thakur replied, "I have this 1-2-3 technique that if I have to fast three times, I'll tie a water pot to myself and drown myself in the Ganges." Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to him that even if the goddess of fortune has to go begging, you will never be bereft of anything that you need. And of course, that also relates, you know what, nicho, nichanam, chaitanas, chaitananam, eko, bahunam, yobadadati, come on, the Lord is maintaining all of us, all the living entities since time immemorial. So, of course, the rest of us do have to work. But we should not over-endeavor in our work. What we generally find that devotees, they just over-endeavor and they, let's say, they get a house that's too big or get a car that's too expensive and then spend all their time, men and women, man and wife, both working to support what they have. So that was Srivas Thakur's method of maintaining himself. Another story is the Devananda Pandit story. Now, Srivas Thakur, being a great devotee, Jai Shri Shri Gandharvika Giridhari, being a great devotee of the Lord, he loved to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And so whenever he would hear Bhagavatam, he would manifest the different bhavas. Now, according to the workings or the writings of Srila Rupa Goswami, there's the vibhava, there's the anubhava, the sattvika bhava, the vyabhachari bhava, and the stai bhava, these different types of bhavas. Or vibhava refers to things that stimulate the other bhavas. For example, there's Krishna, Gandharvika, Giridhari. So when we look at Krishna, Krishna himself stimulates emotions. Just like yesterday, we came here to see the deities, first thing. And then right on Krishna, Krishna's garland and Srimati Radharani's garland with butterflies. You saw that? It was amazing. For basically hours, they were there switching garlands for months. I took pictures of it.
They came around 8 o'clock in the morning.
And they were there when I arrived at 10. And I posted
one and then a second.
It was amazing. I posted it on Facebook. Devotees were amazed. So that was something that stimulated my emotions. I said, wow. So that's called a vibhava. Or even things that are connected to Krishna. For example, Mukunda, one time, Krishna's associate, Lord Chaitanya's associate, saw a peacock fan that was fanning the kazi, and he fell down from the dais in which he was standing. So that's called a vibhava. So the Bhagavatam is a stimulation for ecstasy for devotees. Just like even if a devotee sees the Bhagavatam on the shelf, you know, looks and sees the Bhagavatam, then it stimulates the ecstasy, because the Bhagavatam is the book Krishna. So, Srivas Thakur one time was walking by a Bhagavatam class that was given by this person, Devananda Pandit. And when he heard the Bhagavatam being spoken by Devananda Pandit, he immediately fell down on the ground, shivered in ecstasy. But unfortunately, Devananda Pandit's disciples and those who were in the class picked up Srivas Thakur and chucked him out of the class. I mean, I'd probably do the same thing. If one of you started like rolling on the ground, I'd say, take him out of here. But unfortunately, or fortunately for me, it wouldn't be Srivas Thakur, but in this particular case, it was Srivas Thakur. And Devananda Pandit, he had committed this great offense by allowing that to happen. Just by allowing a offense to happen, you're actually culpable for that same offense. Just like when Grandfather Bhishma allowed the attempted disrobing of Draupadi, he was culpable for doing that, just as if he himself had actually participated in that heinous act. So Devananda Pandit continued on his ways, giving class. One day, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu happened to walk by Devananda's class as he was giving the class, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shouted out, "This Devananda Pandit, he will never understand Bhagavatam." That would also be shocking if someone came by in the window there and said, "You know, this pure Krishna Goswami, he'll never understand Bhagavatam." Oh my God. So Lord Chaitanya, but this was Lord Chaitanya. And so Devananda Pandit, he didn't respond to that. So basically he lost his ability to understand the Bhagavatam because he had committed an offense against Srivas Thakur. Later on, he was able to serve this other great devotee of Lord Chaitanya named Vrikeshwara Pandit. Vrikeshwara Pandit was dancing And he was guarding Vrikeshwar Pandit because Vrikeshwar Pandit could dance for 72 hours without stopping. Lord Chaitanya would call Vrikeshwar Pandit one of his wings. He said, if I had two devotees like Vrikeshwar Pandit, I could fly in the air. So then he served Vrikeshwar Pandit. Later on, he had paid obeisances to Srivast Thakur, and then Lord Chaitanya accepted him, and he was forgiven. Srivast Thakur also played Narada Muni in the plays that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did in Srivasangam. And there's many descriptions of these plays in the Chaitanya Bhagavat and the Chaitanya Mangal. Another interesting story about someone committing an offense against Srivast Thakur is the Gopala Chapala story. Gopala Chapala was very upset because he wasn't allowed to enter Srivasangam, because when they had these all-night kirtans, they would station someone to make sure that the person was a pure devotee before they can enter in. I guess it's more or less like a bouncer in the bar, you know. Someone will create problems. So they wouldn't let him in. And he got so upset that he decided to do something. I don't know if you all know this word. He decided to frame Srivast Thakur. Framing someone means someone didn't do a crime, but you plant the ingredients there that make it appear that they did a crime. For example, in certain countries, if they want to put someone in jail, they'll plant drugs in their house. That's called framing someone. And then they arrest them, and they discover the drugs, and they put them in jail. So in this particular case, it wasn't drugs, of course. This particular individual wanted to accuse or have people think that Srivast Thakur was worshipping Durga instead of Krishna, secretly worshipping Durga. So right outside of Srivast Thakur's house, the Srivasangam, he put the ingredients for worshipping Durga, like vermilion and other things, right at the door. Srivast Thakur wakes up and he sees all these ingredients. And, you know, very humbly, you know, he doesn't get defensive. He says, oh, now you all know I'm worshipping Durga. So a devotee isn't really interested in defending himself, a pure devotee like that, in defending himself. Okay, you think I'm guilty, whatever, you know, just leave me alone, let me chant Hare Krishna. So he called for a sweeper, guy took this away. This is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, the story. And the guy took all the ingredients away. Then Gopal Chapala, after 3 days, contracted leprosy. And leprosy is really heavy, you know. Your nose sort of like melts off, your fingers melt off. So he had these worms that were in his body. And he went to Lord Chaitanya and said, Lord Chaitanya, you're the most merciful, most munificent. Please save me. And Lord Chaitanya said, I curse you to be bitten by these worms for millions of births. Imagine the most munificent personality saying that. So, because you've offended Srivast Thakur. So eventually, of course, this Gopal Chapla went to the lotus feet of Srivast Thakur, begged for forgiveness, and he was forgiven and cured by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So serious is the offense against the Vaishnava that even the Lord won't forgive me. Even the Lord may curse one like that. And it's described, sometimes the Vaishnava may forgive you, but then his lotus, the dust of his lotus feet may not forgive you. Wow. So in other words, when we ask for forgiveness, it's not that we just say, please forgive me with something called crocodile tears. You know crocodile tears? That means just false tears. But we actually have a service attitude and we serve the person. Because at the feet means service. It's not that we have some foot fetish in the Krishna consciousness movement. But when we talk about feet, or let's say when we look at the feet of the deity, which is what we're supposed to do when we're taking darshan, is that we immediately, try this sometime, meditate on the feet of Krishna. And immediately you want to serve. And if you go up to the face immediately, you just think, I'm the enjoyer of the face. It's an interesting phenomena that I've experienced. But the feet means I'm supposed to serve, supposed to please you. And then if you have that attitude, you're forgiven if you've committed an offense. Okay. One time, Lord Chaitanya, so many interesting stories about Srivast Thakur. Lord Chaitanya wanted to test Srivast Thakur's love for Lord Nityananda. He said to Srivast Thakur, this Nityananda, nobody knows what caste he is. Why do you let him in your house? And Srivast Thakur replied, look, I have faith in Lord Nityananda. Even if he goes to a liquor store or he marries a Muslim girl, I will not be dissuaded from my faith in Lord Nityananda. And then Lord Chaitanya embraced Srivast Thakur, being very, very pleased with him. Another story was that Srivast Thakur was called by Sachimata one time because Lord Chaitanya had this, what apparently was a wind disorder. You know, the wind disorder, that's Ayurvedic, means that someone appears to be a little crazy. And he said, no, this is not a wind disorder. This is pure love of God. Srivast Thakur's wife was actually a very great devotee too. And there's an interesting story of how, of course, let's go back to the story where Srivast Thakur's son died. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said after that point, he and Lord Nityananda would continue to be the sons of Srivast Thakur. So Lord Nityananda really took that literally in the sense that even though he was old or older than Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he would visit Srivast Thakur's house, he would sit on Malini's lap. You know, he's a full-grown man. Sit on Malini's lap, and he would, this is quite controversial, he would drink her breast milk. And so, very, anyway, Lord Nityananda is the Avaduta. Nobody, Avaduta means like the wind. There's nothing, no rule and regulation. He doesn't function under the ordinary jurisdiction of the material energy. The rules and regulations of the material energy, don't imitate him. Don't be an avaduta. So another time, Lord Nityananda went over to Srivast Thakur's house, and he was sitting with Malini, and a crow stole the ghee pot from Malini, the ghee pot in which the ghee for the deity worship was kept. The crow had flown away with it. And Malini was getting quite nervous because she thought that her husband, Srivast, as I mentioned before, he did have a little bit of a temper, was going to get angry with her. And so Lord Nityananda said, you know, what's the problem? And she said, the crow has taken the ghee pot. Lord Nityananda said, okay, crow, bring the ghee pot back. And the crow brought the ghee pot back. As I mentioned before, only pure devotees were allowed in the Srivast Sangam during the kirtan. One time, Srivast Thakur's mother-in-law snuck in, and she was hiding behind the drapes. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was having his kirtan. And as he was having his kirtan, he kept chanting, but he said, there's no ecstasy today. I'm not experiencing any ecstasy. And he said, someone must be here who doesn't belong here. So they looked all around, opened up the drapes, and there was this old lady, a mother-in-law, just sitting there. And Srivast Thakur said, get rid of her. So they threw her out. Nothing against mothers-in-laws. They can be nice, too. And another time, there was a gentleman who lived only by drinking milk, and Srivast Thakur thought, well, this is a pure soul. Let me let him into the kirtan. And then Lord Chaitanya had a similar response that he didn't feel any ecstasy, and Srivast Thakur explained that there's a gentleman who only lives by drinking milk. He must be pure. And Lord Chaitanya said, this is not a quality of pure devotional service that you only live by drinking milk. But this Brahmin surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, and later on he was let back into the kirtan. So only pure devotees were there, and so Srivast Thakur was instrumental in starting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. So today is his glorious disappearance day, or the commemoration of his disappearance day. Does anyone have any questions about Srivast Thakur? Questions? Yes?
I have a question about one of your remarks.
About what?
One of your comments during the
class, okay.
You mentioned about the goal, well, Prabhupada was very much into the mission.
Mission.
Compared to going back to Godhead.
Yeah.
And we seem to more and more hear about going back to Godhead.
Yeah, we're personally interested, right.
Yeah, is that considered a selfish endeavor?
Well, Prabhupada, here's an interesting story. One time a devotee said to Prabhupada, I just want to serve, I don't want to go back to God. And Prabhupada said, you should want to go back to God. But Prabhupada was addressing that according to time, place, and circumstance. Now, let's go back to the 1960s and 70s when I joined the movement. There was very much a mood of save the world. You know, we would go on Sankirtan, you probably would like this, from 7 o'clock in the morning until 8 o'clock at night distributing Prabhupada's books. Because the whole mood, the mission statement, you know, in ISKCON we don't really have a clear mission statement. It's a problem. Like every successful company has a mission statement, you know, one sentence that people can concentrate on, like Starbucks, you know, I forget their mission. There's something about give the world a unique coffee experience or something. And they're very successful. I mean, I travel a lot. Anywhere in the world, there's Starbucks. And I'm not saying it's only because of the mission. I'm saying it's because people are addicted, too. Like even at, I was in an airport at like 4 o'clock in the morning. People were lined up for hundreds of people just to get their shot of drugs. So our mission statement, even though it was unspoken during the 1960s and 70s, was to save the world. You know, save the world with Krishna consciousness. We didn't really write it down like that. And that's really why I joined the Krishna consciousness movement. It was just becoming Krishna conscious myself. I just wouldn't have moved into a temple. That was pretty austere. I wouldn't have shaved my head, wore bed sheets or anything like that. I mean, what was the impetus for doing that? I was already chanting before I moved into the temple and following the practices. But I'm not saying everyone has to move in the temple, but the whole mood was, you know, and I probably encouraged that. He said to Balavanta, for example, that you're going to become president of the United States, because it hasn't happened yet. Maybe Tulsi Gabbard, not this next election, but maybe. She's preparing for the future. You know, obviously she's not going to win the nomination this particular time. So Prabhupada was thinking, that's why he's called Jagat Guru. Now, he wasn't like Kula Guru. Kula Guru means like your village guru. Jagat Guru means the whole universe. So Prabhupada thought big, you know, again, shooting for the rhinoceros. And the Bhagavatam also states big. Tadvag visargo janataga bifalo yasmin patishlagama badavachapina mananantasha yasho nikatani yat shrinbandi gayanti granati yat sarabha. This Bhagavatam is meant for creating a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization. And of course, Prabhupada was fond of quoting that verse also. It said, even if the words are imperfectly composed, which meant when Prabhupada came to the West, his first Bhagavatams had many let's say English errors in them. But revolution, you know, this was the mood. And it was very inspiring. And now, you know, for the greatest part, you know, I experienced a different mood, isn't it? Amongst devotees, it's just like, not everybody. I mean, here, some of you have, because it's BBT headquarters, you have that mood, but it's just like, you know, back to Godhead, or where's my prasadam? Or you go to a Sunday feast, and all the older devotees are lining up first to get the food. Rather than thinking, you know, these people are guests, they're coming for the first time. And I was, it's happened several times. I was just in, or was in Fiji, which is part of my GBC zone, and all the devotees were lining up, and the guests had to serve them. Can you imagine that? You know, I was trained up that when someone comes to the Sunday feast, eat, let them eat, and if there's no prasadam left for you, that's okay. That's okay. You eat prasadam the rest of the week. This is their one opportunity. You know, there was another time happened in our temple in North Carolina, I think it was 2-3 weeks ago when I was there. All the cooks packed their prasadam, so there was only like 3 pakoras left for 200 people. So what is the mood? Lord Chaitanya's mood is, you know, compassion. Tatikshava, this of course, Kapila Dev, Lord Kapila Dev, Tatikshava Kurunika Suradasa Vedena. Tatikshava, Kurunika, you know, tolerant and compassionate. That means we see the world suffering. If we actually understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Then we'll see through Shastra that people are suffering. You know, just like that story in Australia where there was a lady in a burning building, the devotees were downstairs preparing for the Rath Yatra. Perhaps you heard this story. Okay, I'll tell it. That was during Prabhupada's time. That there was a lady in the second or third floor in the burning building, devotees were preparing for the Rath Yatra right outside, and devotees took off the canopy for the Rath Yatra cart, held it out and said, jump, jump. And the lady jumped and they'd saved the lady. Can you imagine if they just said, well, we're just Hare Krishna devotees, you know. We're just going to chant for you as you burn to death. Sounds familiar. So, yeah, this mission. I'm sure you experienced that too, Lita Gopinath too, isn't it? In the beginning, mission? Because you joined in the early, not super early days like me, but it was like that. And so we need that, you know, talking, you know, more book distribution. Well, see, inspired me. It's an advertisement. So, you know, so we need to feel that people need these books. They need the holy name. They need prasadam. And that has to be, that was the focus in Prabhupada's consciousness. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I mean, he was willing to make so many adjustments to give people Krishna consciousness. I mean, there's the story that was told that he was even arranging for meat to be fed to some Britishers who were coming to Mayapur. Prabhupada, when he started to establish the temple in Mumbai, which is Bombay in those days, he wanted a smoking room in the hotel, so people would feel comfortable about coming, because the whole impetus was like compassion, vanchakalpa thuruvyascha, kripa sindhu. Kripa Sindhu means like an ocean of compassion. Like, compassion means you, paradukha dukhi, you feel others suffering or impending suffering to be more important than your own life. So, it's important. I mean, at least that's my memory of the Krishna conscious movement. And that's how our movement should be. It should be, let's go out. And, Some places, like in our temple, well, many temples in the United States and I think Europe, they get the whole congregation out distributing books. You know, monthly Sankirtan festival. That's Vaishya started that program, which is pretty wonderful. So, my experience is if we're immersed in that mood of helping people, we forget about our own problems. We see things in the right perspective. And I think that the mood has somewhat shifted in the last 15 years, I think, 15, 20 years, to more like going back to Godhead. And I was thinking about that the other day. And I was thinking, you know, I just want to please Prabhupada. I mean, that's bhakti. That's how you go back to Godhead, by not wanting to go back to Godhead. It's like a catch-22, you know. If you're thinking, I just want to get back, that's liberation, basically. I mean, it's an impetus, yes. We understand Chaturvidha Bhajanti Mam. Four types of people come to Krishna. It's the beginning stage. Yes, I want to get out of the material world. Material world is miserable. Get me out of this miserable position. Save me, Krishna. Okay, that's fine. To start. But ultimately, if we do want to go back to God, we have to come to the point, I just want to please you. Mama Janmani, Janmani Sri Bhavata Bhakti, Ahoituki Twaye. And so that means basically pleasing Prabhupada. And pleasing Prabhupada means, you know, spreading Krishna consciousness or giving people Krishna consciousness. And I think last time I was here, I told the story of how I personally experienced that with Prabhupada. That when I explained to Prabhupada that in 1 month in the temple that I was in charge of in Venezuela, that's when Venezuela was actually stable. They had petrodollars then. Now the country's a complete mess. So I explained to Prabhupada that we did 35,000 hardbound Bhagavad Gitas in 1 month in a city that had basically 1.5 million people in it. Not bad. And Prabhupada's eyes opened wide. I mean, I very rarely would you see Prabhupada just like, oh, wow. He didn't say wow, but his eyes opened wide. And then I explained to Prabhupada that this one devotee, one of the devotees had distributed 10,000 of those Gitas. And one of the Prabhupada said, he has the mercy of Krishna. And as I mentioned, I was feeling envious because I was the temple president. Don't I get any credit? And he said, you all have the mercy of Krishna. And then he said, well, it's just like the gopis. They're better. So, anyway, so it was interesting. It was interesting. So, to me, that's Krishna consciousness. Rather than, you know, getting back to Godhead, you know, understanding your spiritual identity, your siddhadeya, I'm a gopi, I'm a coward boy, I'm a rock, you know, whatever. To me, that's it. I mean, yeah, I mean, it'd be nice to understand what I am, but, you know, it'd be nice, but it's not really what I'm focused on. You know, to me, I mean, because when Prabhupada was present, everyone was focused on pleasing Prabhupada. You get a letter from Prabhupada and you drop everything just to do what Prabhupada wanted, isn't it? I mean, it's just like, Prabhupada said, one time he wrote a letter, he said, everyone should just eat once a day and go on Sankirtan. Everybody started doing that and people started dropping like flies because they couldn't eat. But Prabhupada was just making, it was good, hyperbole, you know, making an emphasis. You know, sometimes Prabhupada's instructions were just like to stir you into action rather than just, you know, you got to follow the exact word of the instruction. So it was exciting. That I like that excitement, isn't it? It's fun. Krishna consciousness should be, that is fun. We were having so much fun distributing Prabhupada's books that we would, when we came back at night, we were shaking in ecstasy. And, you know, we'd listen to Prabhupada's tapes and you can actually hear the tape. It's like you're, like what is Huxley said, the doors of perception became open. Don't want to refer to him, but anyway. So it's like someone wiped something from your glasses, your eyes, and cleaned your ears out, and you were able to hear Prabhupada for the first time after being very much mission-focused like that. So, is that right? Yeah, you can see I'm a little excited about it.
Isn't every movement going through that stage first the pioneer spirit?
Yeah.
Then comes more organization and more organization, more bureaucracy, and I sympathize with
you. You need bureaucracy, you know, or
some of it is needed.
But you can't lose that spirit.
Yeah.
I mean, even you see, let's take an organization that's very much organized, Jehovah's Witnesses. They still seem to maintain their spirit of, you know, giving out their watchtower, and they get everybody to go out. And I don't think the bureaucracy or having an organization will necessarily, let's say, impede the missionary spirit if it's done properly. Although Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura said that, he said there's never an religion that wasn't destroyed or something like that by institutionalization. Those aren't the exact words. So we have to be careful about... I'll have to get you the exact quote later. There has never been, you know, sort of like a spiritual society or a religion that hasn't, the spirit hasn't been destroyed because of the, you know, the bureaucracy. That's not his exact words.
Okay, but paraphrase.
Paraphrase.
An organization that has not been...
Yeah, has not, the original spirit has not been dissipated.
Wow.
By that. So... Okay. It's a challenge, but still he wanted bureaucracy, he wanted a GBC, he wanted organization. It's a necessary, it's not an evil, but it's necessary in order to carry out Prabhupada's mission. So if you think of it, if you take your priorities, that's the mission, and that's the reason we have the bureaucracy. Not that we have a bureaucracy, you know, not that the mission serves the bureaucracy, but the bureaucracy serves the mission. So that's why we need a mission statement. And I think it's really lacking right now. Something that everybody, in one sentence, that everybody can really focus on. And just like a mantra. Because successful companies have that. You have a mantra. You know, save the world. I'm not saying that I'm going to give everybody a mission statement, but, you know, save the world or something like, you know, obviously that's too... Anyway, it's overused. But something that really can inspire people to focus on Prabhupada. And so you please Prabhupada, that's how you become a pure devotee. That's my understanding of how to be a pure devotee. It's service. Jivera Surupa Hoy. Nitya Krishna Das. And Nitya Krishna Das means we're servants of a servant of a servant. I was urban Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa 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 Dasa. Yes, Lita Gopinath, you have a question.
Wasn't there something, I remember devotees used to talk, when they were talking about book distribution, like saving the world one book at a time.
Yeah.
Like that was kind of like a mantra at one point. I remember hearing
Yeah. Yeah, obviously one book at a time, or you can give people a whole stack of books distributed.
Yeah, it was kind of like an impetus to...
Yeah, it's contributing to the to that mission. I mean, according to one's capacity. I mean, we can't. We shouldn't come to the point of just saying, you know, those devotees who do a lot are actually more Krishna conscious. You know, there's the Hanuman and Spider thing. You know that story that Spider was doing as much as Hanuman because he was doing 100%. And there's also the statement Krishna doesn't see so much what you give but what you hold back. So, I mean, to me, life is exciting because there's so many conditioned souls, so much challenges, right? There's challenges. Without a challenge, Prabhupada said, probably another thing Prabhupada said is, without opposition, where's the chance for glorious victory? Because a devotee asked Prabhupada, why there's so many problems? So Prabhupada said, without opposition. I mean, just like if you had the Mahabharata and the Kauravas surrendered to Krishna, it would be a boring book. Can you imagine? The Kauravas say, yes, you're right. I mean, Duryodhana says, yes, you're right, Krishna. Yes, you're right, Arjuna. He's my brother. I love him. Okay. I'm not interested in reading such a book. It's quite boring. So, you know, there has to be a challenge. I mean, the gopis have challenges. Krishna leaves them. That's a challenge. It's purification. It's, you know, purification, because we misuse or overuse the word purification in Krishna consciousness. You know, just like every time you get sick, like you have a car accident, you're getting purified. If you overeat and you get indigestion, you're getting purified. I remember I joined the movement. Everything had too many hot peppers in it. So I was having indigestion. Yeah, this is purification for you, Prabhu. Temple president yells at you, you're getting purified. I don't think we should use that word purification that much. So my point is that, you know, that we have a mission. And it's exciting. It's really, to me, it's really exciting. No one else here is excited. No. It's just that old time sannyasi speaking, an old man. He's just thinking of the good old days. It's like people sit in America, you know, the old people sit on rocking chairs and they drink their mint julep. Mint julep, you know that?
No.
Anyway, it's an alcoholic drink. And in the South, they said, remember, Herman, how we used to be do this? And they rock like that. So, they, you know, an old sannyasi comes here and you tell them about old days. Okay. When are you leaving, Maharaj? So anyway, so any other questions or comments? Yes. Oh, Ramarta or Dainanda, yeah. Jainanda.
I'm wondering about this particular pastime when Srivastava's son died. They didn't want to interfere in Prabhupada's kirtan. So that sounds like a very controversial pastime in many ways. So how could that be explained to somebody who is not familiar with Krishna consciousness, like...
Well, Lord Chaitanya didn't kill him. I mean, that would have been really controversial, but...
No, I mean the controversy...
Yeah, that Srivastava Thakur didn't... told his wife not to cry.
Yeah.
And not to stop the kirtan. Well, it wasn't going to make a difference. First of all, the best thing for the son is that if he heard Lord Chaitanya's kirtan as he was leaving his body. So a devotee's compassion... Thank you for asking the question because the answer is coming. Because a devotee's compassion is not sentimental. It's to do the best thing for someone. Like Prabhupada gave the example of a boy who had jaundice and he wasn't supposed to eat fried food. And his brother, being sentimental, gave him fried food and made the person more sick. So the best thing is actually chanting the holy name. So that was the best thing for the son rather than to hear women crying. I'll give you one example of something that of the opposite that happened to me. I went to a cremation once. Actually, at my age, I'm going to funerals regularly. hopefully not my own. But anyway, so when you get my age, you have someone who die, several people who die who you know every week. It's just like, you know, so anyways, I went to this funeral. I was at cremation. And at this particular cremation, they let women into the crematorium. That's prohibited. This is amongst Indians. And I was thinking, you know, why do they let them in? Anyway, not that I know anything about women. I'm very liberal and everything like that. But I'll tell you why. So we were having a kirtan as they were doing the cremation. You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Then all of a sudden... there were 20 women who started to wail. And it wasn't like in Mayapur you go, you know, the auspicious sound. It was wailing and it was piercing the ether, probably calling some ghost. So they were wailing. And then the men who just wanted to support their wives told me, stop the kirtan. Get out of here. I thought, oh my God. Confirmed. So I thought, oh my God. I mean, the most auspicious thing is this kirtan, is this guy's body is being cremated. And out of sentiment, you know, the cremation, the guy's probably hovering around his body still. Because that's why we have cremation. So that the person will just leave the body. Yeah, because you see your body. It's like you have these near-death experiences. You know, they look down and they see, oh, the ambulance is around my body, the police are there. Wow, pretty cool. And then they're called back into their body, right? And it's called NDE, near-death experience. It's also OBE, out-of-body experience. So the guy was probably hovering around his body, and he was getting ready to leave his body. The most auspicious thing is to hear the chanting of the Lord's holy names. Instead, he hears a lot of people wailing. Reminds me of a story, Plato. story of Socrates. And Socrates, this is in the dialogue called the Phaedo, where Socrates took the hemlock, and his wife comes and she starts crying. And Socrates says, get her out of here. He said, I'm not... Basically, he tells everybody he's not the body. This is not against women, not against wives or anything like that. Believe me, you know, I'll probably get lynched after this class. I am not chauvinist. I'm the opposite. I'm very liberal. But basically, you don't want to have a lot of people crying when someone leaves the body. How about that explanation? And so, basically, Shivas Thakur didn't want to stop the kirtan, but also he was thinking of his son's welfare. Because the son later on said, I leapt during the kirtan. So if he said, I leapt while all the ladies were crying, it wouldn't have had the same effect. Okay? So that's compassion. Compassion doesn't mean you blow on a boil, you find some antiseptic. Like Prabhupada talked about, blowing on a boil. You actually lance the boil, do something practical. So even though, you know, sentimentally, I don't want to hurt you by lancing your boil, my dear son. You know, where you go to the dentist and he says, this won't hurt. That means it's really going to hurt. So, Sasaki, you had a question?
I thought I could add that sometimes when the story is told, there's an image that the death is kept secret, uh-huh. and the whole person, we don't want to mention him, and yeah. Like that. But when you tell it like that, it's actually, you tell a story which can end in two different options, and then if they would have ended the kirtan, then the whole scenario would have ended in, you know, everybody crying like that. Mm. So that was not...
It's not auspicious.
Yeah, so it was better that it ended in kirtan, but it was not like to minimize his value.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't to minimize the boy's value. Otherwise, why would Lord Chaitanya personally go and touch the boy afterwards and bring the boy back and say, why have you left Srivast Thakur? I mean, you see Lord Chaitanya being very munificent. I mean, there's many stories that sometimes appear very cruel. I mean, I was thinking that someone asked me about this story the other day about Lord Ramchak sending Sita Devi away. Of course, what some washermen said. But internally, what's going on is that Sita Devi and Lord Rama are experiencing this Vipralamba Seva, you know, Vipralamba, you know, intense separation, which actually is a higher mood of ecstasy. So if you look at things externally, it appears very cruel. You know, Lord Ramchandra was extremely cruel to send Sita Devi away. But on the higher level, you know, the esoteric level, it's something that's very deep and loving. Okay.
You mentioned the churning of a body.
Mm-hmm.
In connection with Nimi also.
Nimi, yeah.
Is there any information how do you churn a body?
Well, they have this device now called CRISPR. You've heard of this before?
Yeah.
I'm not sure it's the same way. Where they do the genetic
engineering. I have a similar feeling.
it's I guess it's genetic engineering using mantras. Rather than, you know, also with Vena, they did a similar thing.
Yeah.
They got rid of the bad genes, that was Bahuka, and the good genes were Pritu and Archie. He got a man and his wife from one set of genes, pretty good. And, yeah.
It's something scientific, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very scientific. It's like, it's genetic engineering.
Oh.
Basically, it's genetic engineering. So this is not something new. It was understood in the Vedic culture. You know, like people think the atom bomb is something new. They had the Brahmastra, which is far more focused than the atom bomb is. So the technology was extremely, extremely developed. I mean, especially using yogic powers, people could do things. I mean, for example, and this is one thing I'm studying right now. Oh my God, show how much I'm admire. I'm studying how the material world is like a virtual reality setup that's actually made by God. Anyway, that's it. So one of the things we learn in quantum mechanics is something called non-locality. That you can have two things going on like billions of miles away and one influences the other like that. So using yogic powers, you can have someone transfer himself from one part of the universe to the other faster than the speed of light. Because he's actually obtained these powers. So science, you know, what science is coming across now can be equated in many ways with what the yogis were doing, or even Narada Muni when he gave Magrari a virtual reality experience. You know, virtual reality. Does everybody know what that is? No. That means when you put on these goggles or they plug you in, plug your brain. So Magrari was shown his future by Narada Muni if he had kept half killing the animals. And Magrari changed his future by getting scared and taking up devotional service. Like Prabhupada also said, he said, I have created your good fortune. So in other words, and then Prabhupada said, you have to go out and create others' good fortune. Now, so it's a very similar thing. This sounds like quantum mechanics. There's a realm of possibilities in the future. And quantum mechanics talks about that anyway. Sorry, this is what I've been studying recently. I'm just like completely in Maya. So, you know, the realm of potentialities, they say. So we have a realm of potentialities for our future. Nothing is actually predetermined. We can decide to actually be serious about devotional service and change our future. Just like Prabhupada said, when you chant and dance, all the lines on your hand change. You know, everything changes. So that's why we don't take so seriously astrology. It may be good for marriages or something like that, but Prabhupada said, I created your good fortune. So, you know, devotees, sometimes they go to the astrologer. The astrologer says, I think you're going to bloop from the Hare Krishna movement. And, you know, there's this thing called the power of suggestion. If you tell someone enough times, you know, tell a lie enough times because the truth. Of course, there's one politician in the United States who's expert in that. Make Sweden great again. Anyway, so so there's a power of suggestion. You know, people hear this from an astrologer and they think, yeah, that's what's going to happen. I'm going through my Saturn period. Oh no! One astrologer told me I was going to die when I was. Several told me I was going to die when I was 55. I was just waiting. Hare Krishna, don't. Talk to me, Prabhu. Don't turn on the computer, you know. Tomorrow I turn 55. I was disappointed. I didn't die. Or maybe I wasn't disappointed. And then someone said, oh yeah, this is one of my godbrothers, another sannyasi's expert in astrology, said, your next year is going to be the worst year in your Krishna consciousness. It was the best year I ever had. You know, it's fantastic. I've been chanting better, you know, reading the Bhagavatam more, you know, it's the best year I ever had. I didn't get sick. You know, there's the Krishna factor, so.
Yeah. Is he asked
cheaters?
Cheated.
Is it the cheaters and the cheaters? I'm not saying the astrologers are cheaters. They may be very good astrologers. But Krishna consciousness, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when you chant Hare Krishna, even the Purabdha karma gets dissolved. We have to have faith in the holy names, in the process of Krishna consciousness. It changes everything. Even the Purabdha karma. I've had arguments with devotees about this. They say, no, not the Purabdha karma. If you had the Purabdha karma, you would die. I said, no, Krishna maintains you up to that point. And he gives you a token reaction. Yeah, the fan slows down, you get a token reaction, but that's Krishna administering the token reaction. It's no longer just the mechanistic laws of karma. So the Krishna consciousness, we are so fortunate. I mean, there's so, and it's amazing. Krishna consciousness is amazing. That's all I can say. I think we should end now because it's time for prasadam, right?
I have so many questions.
All right.
Tomorrow
we can have more questions. Srini has a question.
Like many devotees and many people, they go to the astrologer.
They go to Australia?
They go to the astrologer.
Astrologer. Oh, they went to Australia. I'd like to go to Australia. Well, I just use a crystal ball. It's quicker than an astrologer. I'm just, that's a joke.
Pendulums
or Ouija boards.
Yes, they're also good.
Ouija boards. Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the best sannyasi? Anyway, so. You can find out. I mean, it's like getting a weather report. I'm not decrying astrology. But Prabhupada, even when he was in the final days, said, let's hear from the astrologer, let's have a good laugh. Basically, Prabhupada said, there's the Krishna factor. And even, you know, what is that song, Kesara Sara? You know the song? The future is not ours to see, Kesara Sara. We should live every day like it's our last. I mean, it's the last. Take every opportunity to serve Krishna. So let them go to astrologers. I mean, the only time I use astrologers right now is someone says they want to marry someone else, and I say, all right, see if you're the same, Ghana, you know, whatever, and see if you're the... And sometimes, you know, we had some marriages where, oh, this is perfect. They were married for many lifetimes. Worst marriage possible after they get married. So, yeah.
Because I'm doing astrology myself, and what I can see is that it's such a complex science.
It's very complex.
So the problem is that astrologers are not capable enough.
Yeah.
Still, you can see many things, and you can see even in the life of pure devotees how you can see the happenings there. So there are astrologers saying that it's actually not karma only you can see in the chart, it's actually everything that happens within time.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is that where are the astrologers who actually are capable of doing with astrologers?
Yes. Oh, but also, to add something to that. In addition to the Krishna factor, consciousness changes matter. There's another important discovery of quantum mechanics, is that by measuring something, you can, let's use the example of a photon. By measuring where a photon goes, you can change it from a wave to a particle.
Double slit.
Yeah, the double slit experiment. And even if you measure it after it goes through the double slit, it figures out that you're going to measure it after. You understand what I mean?
And when you watch it, it behaves differently.
Watch it, it behaves differently. So consciousness affects matter. And we have the ability to... We have the ability, even on the mundane sphere, what to speak of the spiritual sphere, to actually change. I mean, it's a common understanding that many chronic diseases come from different states of mind or consciousness. Now, I'm not criticizing, astrology is good. don't want to criticize your astrology, but, and I do use it when I'm trying to help people get together, marriages. You know, one of Sannyasi's main businesses is arranging marriages, you know. In this kind, you know, you go to temples and you say, I have a girl for you. You know, definitely it's not part of the Vedic culture, but it happens. So, yes, I know it's weird.
I think we hear about the prospect, we hear about free will, and any astrologer, tarot reader, or that, they said, you know, we'd be out of the business if your life was good. If you'd actually listened, you know, remember you have free will. So that's something I always hear.
Yeah.
A good one will always say, look, this is what we can say, whatever, we can read your chart, read the cards, whatever, but,
yeah,
you know, you can change it because you have free will. And it's in our philosophy as well.
Yeah.
We can change our destiny by chanting Hare Krishna, you know, because that's our choice.
That's true. I mean, you can predict someone's destiny, but destiny can be changed. Prabhupada said, I have created your good fortune. I mean, that's the way I think that Prabhupada, whatever good fortune I have is coming from my connection with this divine grace.
But Prabhupada also consulted us.
Yes, but he didn't take it that seriously. No, it's I also would do sometimes, too. I mean, I have no problem with that. I have one of my godbrothers, actually, I won't mention his name. He's sannyasi. He's very expert. He has everyone's horoscope memorized. Not everyone in ISKCON, but all the GBC and gurus. And, you know, I go to... He's really expert. I mean, he has a brain like a computer. And I just ask him, I said, what should I watch out for this year? So beware of Sweden. Anyway.
Did he say that?
No, I'm not. Okay. No, that's a joke. Beware of the Ides of March. That's from Shakespeare, actually. Yeah, anyway, so... I think it's time to end.
If you understand the software of this virtual reality,
yeah,
you can see how things develop.
That's true.
But for devotees, they are directly under Krishna's control, so anything's possible.
Yeah, anything's possible. Yes, it's actually, yes, the programming of the virtual reality.
There's a software.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
some rishis understood it.
Yeah. Yeah, that.
Brigo understood it. He got it.
Yeah. Yeah, Bhrigu understood the Bhrigu Samhita.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, there's a particular software, and once you understand it, like the yogis, they can act beyond the software, you know.
Yeah. But it's still all...
Yeah, there is software.
Not really to understand that. The point is how to get out, or how to bring as many people as possible to get out, right?
Yeah, to get out.
He has a mission statement, by the way.
Who?
You want to hear it?
Bhrigamuni.
No, the BBT has a mission.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
Krishna for everyone in every language of the world.
That's good.
We worked on it for 2 years ago. So, Krishna for everyone in every language of the world.
How about this for ISKCON? Anyway, Krishna for everyone and everyone for Krishna.
Very nice. I like that.
That just came out. Anyway, I think
it's a mission statement.
I think our mission statement is to somehow or the take prasadam.
Yeah.
All glories to the Prabhupada. Thank you. Hare Krishna.